There's such incredible power in that message of you're not alone. That's what's partly motivated me to do this particular kind of little spin-off series is just that, is that like there's so much power in just someone sharing their story. There's always someone who can relate. There's always someone who can speak up. There's always someone who sees a little bit of themselves in the story that you share.
Welcome to the Multi-Amory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
So whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're diving into another Multiamory story. For this episode, I had a conversation with Corey Nicole Williams. The reason I found Corey is because for years, I've had a Google search alert set up for the term relationship anarchy. Now, the reason for this is there's not a lot of direct or official resources for relationship anarchy. You know, I think a lot of people kind of stumble into this term. Maybe some people are familiar with the Relationship Anarchy Manifesto, but the term itself and the concept I find really shifts and changes and is interpreted differently by very different people. And so I set up the search alert because I've always been curious to track how the conversation is shifting and moving as more people write and create content about this concept. So I came across Corey's article on Mind Body Green titled, "As a Queer Person, Relationship Anarchy Helped Me Create the Family I Need." Corey is a very talented writer, and I highly recommend that you go Google that title, go check out her piece. Corey Nicole Williams is a freelance writer who graduated from St. John's University. She strives to use her voice to support and uplift others, but she also loves Marvel movies and writing about entertainment news. Her work has been published at 17, Distractify, Mind Body Green, and elsewhere. Corey and I had a wonderful conversation where we talked about relationship anarchy, queerness, mental health, Christianity, and so much more. I hope you enjoy. Can you recall some of the earliest messaging and lessons that you received about romantic relationships and sexual relationships?
I don't even think in terms of romantic that I had a message really, like not directly told to me, just because I think it was just assumed how certain things would go. I think there's a lot of assumptions of, well, you know, I'll end up with a man and have kids with said man and, you know, grow old with these kids and this man, and that is not really how it ended up working out. If anything, one message I know I had for sure was that I was to be abstinent growing up, no sex till marriage, that whole thing. I grew up in a Christian household, and that was just not something that we did. It was never like forced on me, but you know, whenever like, you know, there's someone on TV talking about it, it's like, Corey, come look. I'm like, okay, that kind of thing. Which is funny though, because I actually chose abstinence on my own outside of any of that. It was something I chose. And then when I was older, I made different choices. But yeah, that was something I chose at a young age. So I never really understood why that was pushed when I was already here. But okay.
That's so interesting, because I also grew up in a Christian household, very strong purity messaging, very strong abstinence messaging. That's interesting that you indicate that it's like, this is actually something that I chose for myself, separate from being pushed into that. Can you remember your thinking around that at that age?
I was just, I don't want to say devoutly religious, because I don't know how devout you can be at like 13. But yeah, I was just like, concerned with, you know, my relationship with the Lord, how me and Jesus were finna get on, you know, how we were gonna be homies at that age. And so I felt like one of those things was, you know, waiting until marriage, being like what I thought Jesus would have wanted me to be. And then part of that was, you know, me being abstinent until marriage. And it was something too where I was at an age or going into my teenage years, everyone was talking about having sex or doing something of a sexual nature or whatever the case may be. And I was like, that sounds like a lot. I don't want to do all of that anyway. So it's easier. Just life is simpler this way. And frankly, that's true. For me, at least, it was a lot simpler not having to deal with all of that.
So for you, it felt like a little bit more of an empowered choice that you made on your own rather than something that was just forced on you.
Yeah, it was definitely like a choice that I made, and I was proud of it. And I let everybody knew, not everybody, but people knew. I wasn't afraid to talk about it. It wasn't something that I was like too personal or scared to talk about.
Oh, wow. So you were even like shouting it to the rafters as well.
Yes.
When did that start to shift for you?
I went to Catholic school.
Oh, boy.
I went to a Catholic college. And whilst I was there, you know, at least at the school I went to, you're supposed to take 3 theology classes. At least at the time, this was like 5-6 years ago. 3 theology classes and 3 philosophy classes. And you could take whatever classes you want as long as they fit that criteria of the class. So I ended up taking a few different classes. And, you know, a lot of the professors either were Catholic or Christian or didn't really care too much for like historical or traditional rather beliefs. Or they were like, this is some bullshit. Here's what you need to know. Whatever they said. You know, this is what I actually remember. Some philosophy course, the first day, the professor was talking about Jesus being some fancy man in the sky, and someone was so offended they just walked out. And I was like, oh, okay. So the class is like that.
Oh, no.
It was like that,
wow.
Yeah.
You talked about certain professors being like, okay, this over here is bullshit, and here's what's the actually important thing. Like, do you have a specific example that you can recall of that that was influential to you?
I remember I took my only Saturday class, because I was like, I wonder what it's like to take class on Saturday. Just in case you didn't know, it's some bullshit.
Suspected.
But I think this was the only day of the week I could take the class in terms of my schedule. Anyway, so I'm taking this Christian marriage course, and the professor is I believe he was a Catholic, and he, I don't know if he still is or if things change, or I'm sure his like beliefs have changed over the years, but he was saying how he grew up that way, and now he taught us essentially the history of marriage, what it meant to be married throughout the years and all that stuff. And he's basically saying about how the Bible just says that, you know, waiting until marriage is just a way for men to control women. And something about that just like did something to my spirit. Like, I was like, wait a minute, wait. Like, I feel like I knew, but then when he said that, I was like, damn, no, I know now. You know, I can't deny that now, because he's saying it and he has like references for his facts. And I'm like, okay, damn. So now it's like I'm going on this journey of like, what do I really believe? How do I feel about what I believe? And I had a boyfriend at the time too. So I was waiting, and he was only waiting because I was waiting. So not that he pressured me, because that's not what I'm saying, but it was very much so I could be having sex right now. You know, I could see what this is like. I could do the thing and discover what this aspect of life is. And if I'm really interested, what really is stopping me? You know, so I just got more curious. And after a while, it was just like, maybe this isn't the biblical wave I need to be on.
That's really amazing to me, because when I think about my own upbringing, it wasn't Catholic, but it was evangelical Christian. And to be presented with a concept like that about, hey, marriage has a history. It hasn't always been this thing. It hasn't always been this like spiritually divine, God-blessed thing, you know, it does have this history and patriarchy and control of women. To get a message like that from a secular source would be so easy to be like, oh yeah, well, it's a secular source. It's a secular professor. They're way too liberal. Like, of course they're going to say that. But to get that from an actual Catholic institution and a Catholic professor, I feel like that would have, if I were in your position, would have just like blown the doors off my reality, which it sounds like it did for you to a certain extent.
Yeah, college really was like my whole life shifted in college. And I can see why looking back now, but at the time it was just like, what do you mean, you know, that I can do all these things and that I hadn't even thought of before, you know, all these different aspects of life, especially because I grew up in but the thing is, I think with my household growing up, we weren't so like devoutly Christian that like we couldn't watch TV or anything, like things like that. We weren't so, it wasn't such an extreme environment, but it was like, you know, just be aware that God loves you. And like, if you follow the T teachings and things like that. You know, you can live your best life in heaven, that kind of thing. But I think, you know, as I grew up, like I said, it just kind of shifted into like a, I still believe in Christ. I still want to have this relationship, but do I really want to have it like this? And I think the more I questioned how I wanted to do it, the more I opened up to just like living life a different way.
So your boyfriend that you had in college, did that feel like it was like a serious, like definitely going to get married kind of relationship, especially since the two of you were deciding we're going to wait?
That was definitely the plan, I think, at one time. And I think that's part of the reason we broke up is because like, I was so scared to get married. I didn't know if that was the best idea. And frankly, for me, it wasn't. We went to a small high school. So everyone knew us. I knew everyone. Everyone knew all of our business. And it was just like, everyone in a way was like, oh, so you're going to get married, right? And I'm like, well, I don't know what that feels like or what that looks like. And then people, and it became a thing where I felt like I almost lost who I was because the school was so small. So people were like, oh, where's Matthew? Whenever it was just me. And I'm like, oh, well, he's not here. It's just me. I'm sorry if that disappoints you that it's just me here. Everything that I did had to be with him, or if it wasn't going to happen, or I couldn't do it. And it became a thing where I was always checking in with him to see what he was doing and what I was doing. And we were always so like together. And I kind of felt like I wasn't being myself all the time. And on top of that, I was kind of, you know, being in college and you're seeing people doing different things than you grew up seeing. So people are being openly queer, openly gay. And like, I'm just like, well, what if I want to do these things? Can't do these things in the relationship. So it's like, I wonder, like, if I really am gay. I was very much into questioning my sexuality at that time. And it was just like, this just really isn't conducive to the growth I think I should have. Me being with him, always felt like I had to get married because of people's expectations of us. But then I knew that that may not be the best idea because I had all this self-growth I had to do, and I felt like I couldn't do it with him in the picture at that time.
Yeah. I think it's especially hard what you're speaking to because I do think in a lot of the Christian tradition, we are kind of trained to look at relationships as you become one unit. Right? Yeah. That's literally biblical. Like you become this one person, you become one flesh. And so from a very, very early age and a very early time, and sometimes in very inappropriate relationships, it's like you're encouraged to have that hive mind where we just come as a unit kind of way of relating to the world, which like you said, really isn't conducive when you still have a lot of self-discovery to do.
Yeah. Especially being so young, I was like 20 something. We were together from when I was 17 to when I was 21, 22, I believe. So those are those years, you know, I'm in college trying to figure out my life. And it just, you know, being committed to the one person for the rest of my life just really didn't seem, the older I got, like, it made sense.
Was it scary to leave that relationship or did it feel liberating?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think it was scary because I felt like not only was I disappointing people that I cared about because people I knew were really rooting for us and our families all knew each other and all of that, but it was also like not liberating in the sense that like I'm finally free, but more in the sense of like I can see what my life could be. You know, I could see what could be moving forward, you know. And that was when I entered my first like polyamorous relationship. And, you know, I was doing gay shit. That was fun. So, yeah.
I'm curious to rewind the tape there a little bit because you talked about, like, you know, there were these influences around you where you could observe and you could see what your life could be. And I'm curious, what were the things that you were seeing that you feel like were the most influential? Were there particular people or like particular scenes or particular communities or particular events? Like, what do you think was influencing that most to kind of start thinking about the ways that your life could be different?
I think that even though I went to like a Catholic school, there was a lot of queerness, a lot of trans people, a lot of people openly doing and experiencing and being these things and these people. And so I don't think in the moment I'm like, oh my gosh, I can do this too. But it was just like, that if I like, or if I'm attracted to this person, like I can see where that goes, you know, just like so-and-so is doing. A lot of my friends in college, and even people I'm cool with now from college, are non-binary or somewhere in some kind of transgender experience. A lot of people are bi or pansexual. A lot of people have done things just to see how they felt about it, just to experiment and see how they felt. So, you know, that was something that I was just constantly around. And I think that when people kind of indirectly give you the okay to do things, you just kind of feel like you can do them too. I feel like growing up too, I kind of felt like I kind of gradually opened up my mind to the idea of like being with women or just another gender in general. It was just kind of like, before I even knew what being transgender was, you know, growing up and seeing other girls, seeing women I felt were attractive was something I always experienced, but it was like, but that's just because other women are beautiful. And I can't be bi because I've never been with a woman anyway. And like, well, they just look nice. And they, you know, things like all those things you say before you realize, like, actually, wait, like, I'm actually bisexual. Yeah. I said all those things and I was really concerned with how much experience is enough to be considered bisexual. And there was definitely a point where I was like, well, I can't claim the identity if I've never done certain things, you know, because I knew from a young age that bisexual people got a bad rap. And it was just like, well, I wouldn't want to add to that stigma. So let me just like chill out and see how I feel before I just say words out loud.
And how did that go? So, I mean, so then what was that like? Was it then it's like, okay, now I got to go out and like get a bunch of experience under my belt?
No, because I was still awkward. I'm still very awkward. So it's like, I couldn't do anything anyway. What am I going to, how am I going to gain this? How am I going to experience these things? Versus the idea, I feel like a lot of people were just like, you're not going to, if you haven't dated a girl, then you can't say that you're bi. And it's like, okay, but what girl would even want to go out with me? Like, how do you even meet people to do gay things with? I don't even know how that works. So at the time it was just like, well, I'm just going to be here and like in the back, quiet, not expressing anything because I don't want to be that person. Yeah. It took, after I broke up with my ex-boyfriend, I realized that if I'm going to do gay things on purpose, I got to put myself in spaces where there are other people who might be attracted to me. So I actively sought out, like, you know, dating apps and stuff. We've all been on Tinder.
And, oh, yeah. Unfortunately.
Right. Oh, my God. It's so bad. You know, we've all been through those things and been on, like, Facebook groups. And because I had met certain people, I was just becoming friends with people who were transgender or who were just living life differently than myself. And it was really just eye-opening to see people be happy doing all these things that I grew up not knowing you could do. Because it wasn't like we were talking about like being gay is horrible or like being transgender is this horrible thing. We just never talked about it growing up. I never knew until I was in school and seeing those things. So I didn't grow up with the stigma, which I think is good. Like my family's always been very like accepting, but it just wasn't spoken about. So it was like, well, I don't know anything bad about these people. So in my head, they're just people doing other things. So I think that was like one of the things where I could say like, you know, I didn't have any kind of preconceived notion going into meeting these people. It was just like, it was what it was.
So did things turn out super great on Tinder?
I've met some great people on Tinder that I'm friends with. No, pause. That's a lie. I did meet someone I dated on Tinder and we dated for a few months. And then I met one of my closest friends on Tinder. We're still cool to this day. And that, this was like what? Oh my God. How many years ago? Like 6 years ago? Everything else was trash, but you know, people just want to have sex. So.
Right.
I want to say that overall it was a positive experience because I did meet people who helped kind of shape the way that I viewed things in terms of like polyamory and like being around different kinds of people. But other than that, like it was kind of trash, like mostly trash.
I think not a lot of people would disagree with that assessment. Mostly trash. Do you still identify with the label of bisexual now?
I mean, I use the word now. Okay, so I have no issue being called bi. There's nothing wrong with it for me personally. It fits me. And it's the first word that I ever used to express my sexuality in that way. So I have a little, you know, soft spot in my heart for being bisexual. But I also acknowledge now that I am attracted to people regardless of gender. So there's no, I think I definitely have a preference towards women, but I'm attracted to people regardless. And I don't really use a label unless people ask for like a word, then I'll say like pansexual usually. But then it's like, not everyone knows what that is. And even if I do say that I don't want to be labeled or I don't really care for a label, it's like, oh, but that sounds like you're bi. So it's easier sometimes just to say, you know, that I'm bisexual.
Yeah, it is interesting, like what you brought up earlier about feeling like we need to almost like have a particular resume or a particular amount of experience to be able to claim a particular label.
The number of times I've been asked, but honestly, only by men, so what do you like more? And if I pick one or the other, when I was younger in college, and asked that question, I would pick one, and they would say, oh, so that means you must be straight or you're just gay or whatever. I'm like, I don't think that's how it works. I'm not sure. Mm. I don't think that's how it works. So that was always a thing too. Now that I'm older, I just don't even answer that question. But at the time, I was like, well, I guess if I had to pick one, like, I don't have to pick
right.
one.
Right. That is a weird question to ask someone that you don't know very well.
The number of questions, honestly, in my experience, it's just men that I don't know, or men that don't know me very well. Who it's always cisgender men who ask, so which one do you like more? Do you still like guys? Have you ever had a threesome? Those are the three questions from guys who I don't know. It's always men who, if I've known a man for a long time, and I come out to him and we're friendly and we're cool, it's never those questions. Only a man that I don't know from the next guy. So
that's so interesting. It's like the agenda is really clear with those three questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've mentioned this kind of being a transitional period where you also got into like non-traditional or non-monogamous relationships. What was that journey like for you?
So I did, like, one of the people I met on Tinder, they ended up telling me that they are polyamorous. And at the time, at the very beginning of whatever this was, I was like, well, I don't really care because it's not like we're going to get married tomorrow. I don't know anything about being polyamorous. So why not just like see where things go? And it was just a very chill. It was just we were just together and they were with other people and I could date whoever I wanted. And as long as we were communicative and as long as we were, I don't want to say asking permission, that sounds nasty, but like, being clear with like, hey, I could want to have sex with so-and-so, like letting you know, protection, whatever. If that's okay with you, you know, like not permission, but like, you know, because with the person, it wasn't like they would ever say no unless it felt like dangerous. But like, just being aware, I guess is like what I'm trying to say. Being aware of like saying, hey, I want to do a thing with so-and-so, letting you know beforehand because I don't want it to be weird. Or I don't want to, you know, used to find out from somebody else that I did something. But, yeah. I realized, especially in that relationship, that I'm not a very jealous person at all. I rarely ever, ever feel jealous about anything. So I realized, like, you know, but I do have my moments. So when I am jealous, it's very easy for me to say, like, Corey, this is bothering you for this particular reason. And it's very easy for me to say, okay, so, but why do you feel this way? And once I figure out why, it's like I can go to the person and say, like, I feel XYZ because of XYZ. And hopefully we can work through it. But yeah, I realized that was very important to me because I've always been a very kind of, not a free spirit, but like, I guess a free spirit. I do what I feel like, I guess, within reason. So I feel like that was one of those things too, when my ex was like, you can kind of just like, you know, as long as we're clear about things, we can talk about things, you know, as long as you're being safe, like, do what you feel like. It's like, really? Okay. I guess. It was strange in the sense of like, I've never had that kind of freedom before, considering that my last relationship was so serious and so like monogamously stereotypical. Mm-hmm. But, It was interesting for sure. Cause like I dated other people, but it felt like it was easy. I feel like other people may have looked at it and been like, what are you doing? You know, but I didn't feel weird about it. I didn't feel like I was doing anything wrong. We were open about it. We were talking about it. That's what was important.
It sounds like you had a pretty chill and natural first experience with non-monogamy, which in my experience, working with so many clients and hearing so many people's stories, like often people have the opposite. Often they're dragged into non-monogamy, kicking and screaming, or, you know, with a lot of drama or a lot of like miscommunication. But it seems like it was a really natural fit at the time for you.
Yeah, it's something I would do again with the right people. I realize that looking back, you really have to do this with like, well, any kind of relationship with the right people. But in terms of being polyamorous, I feel like a lot of people have these ideas of what it should or shouldn't be, or what they see in like movies or whatever, or like it being some weird love triangle situation. And that's definitely not what I was going to be a part of. If anything, the only weird parts about it was like the questions I would get from my friends who are like, so which one do you like more? Who are you like, or why do you like this? Or why would you do that? You know, all those questions I would get, but like, mind your business.
Had you ever questioned monogamy or traditional relationship structure up to this point, or was this particular relationship the first time for that?
It was definitely the first time. Being in this relationship was the first time that I even considered doing anything else. I didn't even think, I think before this, that I could do anything else. I realized for myself too that I'm the kind of person who I don't really see it happening for myself until I can see someone else has done it. I think looking back, I've been the kind of person like, I don't think I can do this. But then if someone else does it, it's like, but why can't I? I had never really even seen like a healthy polyamorous thing. I think the closest thing that I had gotten to like people being as healthy as I guess you could be before this was like people talking about how, I guess if you cheat and your partner doesn't know, is it really a problem? Those kinds of things. Before this. But this was the first time, this relationship was the first time where I kind of knew that we could all just be on the same page and everything's okay. And I ended up meeting, you know, their other partners at the time. And it was just a very like positive experience for my first polyamorous situation.
I'm curious what led you eventually into discovering the concept of relationship anarchy.
So a lot of stuff happened in college.
I'm gathering that.
Looking back, a lot of it was in college. Shout out to my school. I realized like it was weird for me because I'm learning all these things about all these kinds of people who do all these kinds of things. And I never did any of those things. And it was just like I was at a weird spot because I had been very suicidal years before at the time, on and off. Throughout my life at that time, I'd been very suicidal. And I would always tell like family and stuff, you know, I hate my life, hate things here, or whatever I would say. I would try and be open and honest with people that I was close to. But it was always like, well, you know, you have things. You have, you know, your health, you're not unwell, you have a roof over your head. What exactly is it that you have to be so depressed about? I couldn't formulate the words at the time, but looking back or getting older and being in college and being able to say, well, it wasn't about any external thing that I hated. The external things were great. I had friends who I was cool with. My family's always been good to me. I didn't really have a lot of issues when it came to external things, but internally, I just felt worthless. I felt like nothing I did was worth the effort. I didn't matter. People loved me, but that was just convenient because I was around. Things like that that you say when you don't, you know, when you don't like yourself. A lot of stuff like that. So I think growing up with that for so long and then being like, well, you know, I tried to reach out to these people who I'm close to. My family was rough on me because, like, not rough on me, but they were like, well, you know, why? You're depressed, but why? Like, they didn't understand. And I think, especially for my mom, who's always been such a strong person in my life, for her, it was like, I don't understand. I want to understand, like, what are you talking about? Going into college and making lifelong friends, like, we've been friends for so many years, and they've always been so accepting. No one questions me. No one was trying to deeply analyze my feelings, you know? I said what I said, and it made sense to them for whatever reason, and that was it. And I think a lot of that too is like having to justify my feelings. So even with friends I had when I was in middle school or like high school, it was like, but you look so happy. okay, but I'm not. So what do you mean? I always felt like I had to prove myself to these people. I don't want to have to keep proving myself to everybody. Except what I had to say, because I said it. This is my experience. But that was never good enough for people for whatever reason, especially these kids in like middle school. Oh my God.
Yeah, rough time.
So I met these kids in college, and it was just like, wow, like people were like, I came out to, the first person I came out to was actually the person I'm going to his wedding. I was finally around people who didn't really care about me having to prove myself, around people who even had the same culture as my growing up. Like my family's from the Caribbean. So who had like the same cultural understanding that I had, so knew the kind of background that my family came from, but still understood from my point of view that like I still felt the way that I did, and that's valid. And it was just so like a weight off of whatever shoulders, you know. It was such like I could breathe, you know. It was so refreshing. I love my family. Everyone's cool over there. Okay, sure. But I really put in all my emotional effort to be told that what I experienced wasn't real. That sounds fake. Like, I can't do that. So with me and my friends, it was just like, I love these people. These people are like a family to me. Regardless of where we've moved to at this point, we're like a family. This was before I realized the concept of a chosen family. But at the time, it was like kind of awakening and unraveling that idea of relationship anarchy, where it was like, well, I can choose a family. I can have a family that I'm connected to by blood, and that's great, sure, whatever. But I could also choose people on purpose who mean something to me and have those relationships mean just as much as my family. That was so like refreshing. That was so cathartic to whatever my little depressed self was feeling at the time.
It's almost like this difference between your blood family. These are the collection of people who technically, biologically gave you life, brought you into life. But then if you find this chosen family of the people who are like actually actively giving you your life and right. saving your life, especially if you're in a depressive state, you know, it's fascinating. We're going to take a quick break from our interview to talk about the best ways that you can support this show so that we can keep bringing stories like this to you for free.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
So my question for you, because I think the concept of relationship anarchy, I guess probably quite appropriately, there has yet to be a single defining voice for relationship anarchy, right? There's yet to be a single defining book or a single person or content creator or whoever who's really leading the charge on defining this concept. And so conceptually, I find that it really shifts and changes and depends on the person. And so how do you even define relationship anarchy?
No one type of relationship is more important than another type of relationship. So if I'm related to someone, they're not automatically important just because we share the same bloodline versus someone I've been friends with for a couple of weeks or so. You know, if I'm cool with that person, we're cool. If not, we're not. But that doesn't make it special or that doesn't make it more important just because I'm related to them. But the same thing also counts for like romantic relationships. I feel like a lot of people put their romantic relationships, whether they be polyamorous or monogamous, on this pedestal of like, this is the most important person in my life. And I'm like, okay, sure. Maybe if you're married and you have kids and finances and all that together, then that definitely makes sense. I don't have any of that. So I don't know what that looks like. But for me, like, my partners have never been more important than my friends just because I was romantically attached to them. I've always been the kind of person to say my friends are just as important, if not more, because I don't know if I like you all the time. Romantic person. You
know? Can relate.
You know, so it's like, I put all of my friends and all of my relationships on like the same kind of pedestal, but it just depends how close we are and where I place that person or that relationship in my life.
On a day-to-day practical basis, how do you think that this concept has changed, like the way that you interact with your family or your friends or your partners? Like, does it change the way that you communicate? Does it change the way that you plan? How does it look on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I'm not in a relationship right now, but when I was, it was always very much, if I was seeing someone and it was like a consistent, serious relationship, then by default, you know, all my weekends would go to that romantic person just because, you know, how often would I get to see them? So by default, that would typically be a thing. Once a week, we can see each other. But let's say like a friend of mine made plans. Well, actually, romantic person, we didn't really make plans. I just gave you the day. So my friend wants to do something this weekend. I'm going to go out with them and I'll see you when I see you. I think a lot of people kind of assume that just because I'm dating someone or just like I have romantic feelings towards someone, that they always come first. And a lot of my friends are like that. I've had issues with friends who are like that. And it just has never made sense for me personally. So I think that just like scheduling my time and like allowing people who I really care about to be in my personal space on a regular basis has changed. But I also don't think I've never not done that. I kind of feel like I've always been a version of this person. Now I have a word to understand how I feel, and this makes sense for me because this is what I've chosen actively.
Other question for you, because this is one that I think always throws people for a loop, and this is a concept that I'm really intrigued by. Do you think that someone can actively choose a monogamous romantic relationship but still be a relationship anarchist?
Yeah, I think I've done it. I think that people in monogamous relationships sometimes can feel, or the stereotype is, that you're the best thing to ever happen to them, that you're this person's everything, that, you know, anything else happens, they're always there for you, or anything that happens, they'll always be your number one. And frankly, that's just not realistic, you know? Especially when you have had friends for years. Like, I've had friends for years who I would do anything for, and you just happen to meet the love of your life tomorrow. That's wonderful. Meet the love of your life, but also understand they're not more important just because you have romantic feelings. Romantic feelings are not the end-all be-all just because you want to kiss them at night. You know what I mean? Talking to your partner and saying like, hey, you know, I love you, but the love I have for you isn't more important than the love I have for my friends, isn't more important than the love I have for my family. You know, just letting people know that that's how you feel and making sure that they're open to that idea. Because I think a lot of people do kind of look for a romantic relationship to kind of be like, they're everything all the time and no one else matters. And that's just not how I see things. I feel like if I love you, I love you. But you also have to understand that with me, I have amazing people in my life already. And if you want to add to the amazing people in my life, then be my guest. Like, come through. Let's do everything together. But at the same time, you're not replacing anybody. You're not more important than anybody else. Unless we really decide to like come together and like build a family, then I guess we can reevaluate that as time happens. But people aren't more important just because you do a certain thing with them that you wouldn't do with anyone else.
What was it that drew you to first start speaking and writing about these things more publicly?
Ever since I came out as bisexual, I need to use my voice. I kind of need to say a thing for people who may not have a voice. While I do intersect into a few different minority groups, I have so much privilege and I have so much, I'm so blessed to have the life that I have. So it's like, if I can help the next person express how they feel, I'm going to do that too. I remember 2018, I wrote about what it's like for people who are Caribbean and queer for a different publication. And my family's from Jamaica. I'm queer, but I've never had those kind of experiences. Some people have told me that they wanted to kill themselves. One person in particular, who told me that he told his brother, like, listen, if I end up being gay, just kill me. Because he knew that going back home to the country that he was from, it just would not be accepted. And so things like that. I also like to learn about people. Like, just people's experiences are just so fascinating. Like, why would you not want to know? If they're going to let you know what's going on with them, like, take all the information you can, like, learn from people. I think that's so interesting. So I think when you, and also when you allow people into your mindset, you know, it allows them to say, like, hey, I'm not alone. It's not just me out here in the void. Other people have my experiences. And I think that's really important too. A lot of people feel like they're alone because they don't have anyone else to speak to or nothing else to compare to. And I think it's really important to give people that space where you can say, like, hey, you know, it's not just you. Like, it's me too. I also struggle with whatever it is, you know?
There's such incredible power in that message of you're not alone. That's what's partly motivated me to do this particular kind of little spinoff series is just that, is that like there's so much power in just someone sharing their story. There's always someone who can relate. There's always someone who can speak up. There's always someone who sees a little bit of themselves in the story that you share. And that's such an important ripple effect that can change so many things. And that actually leads me to, I want to back up a little bit because I am curious to hear about your coming out process and what that journey was like for you. If coming out for you was just about sexuality, was it also about relationship anarchy?
I don't think I necessarily came out in terms of relationship anarchy. I just started to act how I wanted to act. And if you didn't like it, then okay. Don't like it. When I came out, I only came out to my mom per se. I feel like coming out is complicated, but the only person I feel as though I truly went out of my way to come out to is my mom. I felt like she deserved to know, living under her roof, but I also feel like no one else mattered. My siblings are pretty chill. They wouldn't care either way. And like no one else in my life deserved the energy and deserved the emotional deep sigh that it is to come out in such a big way. So I told the polyamorous person I was dating at the time, I was like, listen, I think I said this to them, but I also just to myself, like, listen, if you fall in love with this person who is not a cis man, tell your mom that you're gay, okay? Because she should know. Just say it one time for the one time and move on. And so I ended up catching like really soft feelings at the time for this person. And, you know, really felt like I loved them like that. So I was like, okay, I gotta go and say the words to my mom. And it's funny because the day that I did decide to come out, my friend came over and she's a woman. So I think my mom kind of knew that I was, you know, gonna say something. So I go and I go to say something else beforehand and I kind of didn't leave. So she's like, is there anything else you want to say? and I'm like, so, hey mom. Yeah. Like, and she's like, is that your girlfriend? I'm like, no, it's not my girlfriend. We're just friends. She's not my girlfriend. We're just friends. But I do want to say like, I'm pansexual. And she was like, what does that mean? So I tell her like, you know, pretty much that it means that I'm attracted to people of all gender. I don't really feel like I'm just limited to cisgender men. And she kind of hit me with but there's only two genders. And then I kind of was like, you know what? That's a conversation for another day. Mm. So we'll talk about being transgender and what the spectrum is like all day long, not today.
good boundaries around your energy. Good job protecting yourself there.
Something was like, just say that. Just say it quick. No, you don't have to go into the whole explanation. But thank you. Yeah, I didn't realize how important that was until after I said it. But I was like, damn, okay. But yes, I'm like, this is a conversation for another day. But yeah, I said what I said. She was like, okay, well, yeah, you know, I've always kind of known. So I said what I said. And she was like, well, yeah, that's fine. You know, do whatever you want. And I remember eventually I ended up asking her, can I bring like potential partners or like dates over? She was like, yeah, you know, do whatever you want. So yeah. So she was great about it. It was a lot better than I thought it could have been. You know, like when you're in that doomsday mindset where everything is like, it's either great or you're going to die. That was kind of where I was with the whole thing. So it was really, really good. But I also feel like coming out is such a complicated thing, especially when you're not a lesbian, like, or if you're not attracted to one gender, it's always like, you always have to come out because then it's like, in a way, because they'll see you with a guy, it's like, oh, well, you're obviously straight. Like, well, that's not true. But if they see you with someone who's like a woman, or it's like, well, I'm not a lesbian either. I get that a lot. Mm. People think I'm a lesbian. So I wish lesbians thought I was a lesbian, but whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. It's like this protracted process. Coming out is this like slow process, a constant process, many, many conversations had with many people multiple times. And yeah, that is interesting that you speak to that, that when you're pansexual or some kind of sexuality that's beyond just a particular binary, you set yourself up for this multiple coming out process because of that, because it's like people see you with a woman and assume like, oh, okay, she's finally settled on something.
Yeah.
And you know, and then you have to have another conversation.
Yeah. It's strange. Now that I'm dating again, it's kind of weird because people won't date people who are bisexual for whatever reason. So that's interesting now. I don't mind. If you don't want me, I don't need to want to be wanted by anyone. If that's not what you want, then don't want me. But it's interesting to see like people in their like bios or whatever it is, like know this, know that, no bisexuals, pick what you want, whatever. I'm like, okay.
Jeez. Bye.
My God. Yeah.
Well, outside of the experience on dating apps, do you think that like people of your generation are more accepting in general of like non-traditional ways of relating or of things like relationship anarchy?
I think relationship anarchy for sure is one of those things that people are like at least when I explain it, like, oh, that makes sense. I can see how that makes sense because like, you know, a lot of people I know too also have issues with their family and they just haven't had the space to talk about like how their family has done whatever it is to them to make them feel a certain kind of way. But they have to, you know, honor their parents or honor their relationship because that's their parents. So I think for a lot of people who've grown up in a household where their parents' word was law and are now growing up and realizing that like they can forge their own path and like set the boundaries that they want with their own relationships, it's really important for them. And they're acknowledging that. Other aspects of my life, I don't really think so. Just in terms of like different concepts for me, like being bisexual, like I still get a lot of those same questions. It doesn't matter how old the person is, it's still a lot of, but which one do you like more? Or how can you do that? Or all these things. So relationship anarchy, I think, is an easier pill for someone to swallow once they see how I explain it.
Did you, as a part of all of this, did you go through a deconversion process or do you still feel like you have ties like to your religion and your religious upbringing now?
I think there'll always be a thing where it's like, oh, but what would Jesus say if he saw me do the gay thing? Oh my God. That's something I still struggle with, honestly, especially with like religious beliefs. I still struggle with that. It's like, but what if he doesn't love me anymore because I'm doing gay things? And it's like, does that matter? Like, does that really matter to you? And a lot of people will, you know, have their religious beliefs based on like their personal experience with the Lord, or they'll have things that the Bible say and they're very strict to the book, which, you know, is your business. Obviously, I don't really care much for doing things exactly by the Bible's pages and all of that, but I still try and have that relationship, that connection. I don't feel like when I was made, there were any mistakes. That, like, I'm just how I was supposed to be. I also have, to add on to another intersection to my life, I also have cerebral palsy. That's something you're born with. That's something you can't, like, not have. If you have it, it's there. So I think the whole thing of even saying that I was a mistake, or in a way, or that I did do something wrong implies that God was wrong, and that doesn't work for me. So, like, it is what it is. This is just who I am.
With your religious background now, like, what are the things that you find are actually really supportive and encouraging for you?
That's one thing about a person I previously dated who is also religious, but is of trans experience. That was something we really connected on, was that we are religious, but we also have this, you know, this experience that we want to, like, live and we have this way of life that we embrace, regardless of what religious texts say. I've always tried to pray or just be aware of, like, the Lord's presence, or just being a good person, doing things that I think would be expected of me as a Christian. Mm-hmm. Helping other people out when I can, being there for people when I can, you know, things like that, I think are most important.
A couple of years ago on the show, we did an interview with the person who identified as a queer Christian and actually wrote a lot of resources and, like, created a lot of content around that. And it was a really, really cool episode. Like, really enjoyed talking about queer Christianity and things like that. And I was surprised that we actually got a very polarized response to that episode. It was either people who were just like, oh my God, I'm so glad that you covered this topic. Like, I still identify as Christian and I'm so glad to see myself represented in this way. Or it was people who were very, very resistant. Like, I can't believe that you would even support Christianity. I don't understand how you can justify being queer and Christian and stuff like that. I'm curious to know, like, what you would say to the people who hold that, like, really, really deep sense of aversion to the idea of even trying to rectify being queer and being Christian at the same time.
I mean, for the religious people who are against just the whole aspect of being queer, for those people I can't speak to, because you're going to believe what you want to believe, and that's fine.
I don't think any of those people listen to our podcast anyway, so...
Okay. But for the other side of things, I just feel like my relationship with Christ is really no one else's business. I've been through a lot already on my own. I don't need anybody else coming over here and saying anything else. If you would like to have a constructive conversation, we can definitely do that. And I'm totally open to being told that I'm missing the mark, or I'm doing this wrong in your opinion, or whatever. But to come through and just, like, be negative for the sake of being negative, or, like, bashing my religious beliefs because you don't agree, like, what does that do for us? What does that do for you that you want to come through and be so negative? Like, get a hobby, eat something, you know, do something else.
I like that as a response to just people who are being crabby in general. Just tell them to eat something.
I eat like it's a hobby. So, like, it's a good time.
What are the things that you hope for the queer community in the future?
I hope that the queer community can just embrace itself, embrace each other, embrace the different aspects of the community. I've seen a lot of, like, just negative things from people in the community towards other people in the community, whether it be through, like, dating and stuff, or whether it be through experiences other people have told me about. I just kind of hope that we can all kind of just be more accepting of one another. Like, for dating, for example, it'll be like, I read some profiles and it was like a lesbian who was talking about how she is a stud or more masculine. And she said she doesn't date other masculine lesbians because that's too gay. And I'm like, what does that mean? We're all gay. That's the whole point of it. Things like that. And I have an ex who has spoken about, you know, they are non-binary, but going into queer spaces where you would think that it would be more accepting are not. So even if the other person is transgender and they preach about, let's say, like, using correct pronouns, my ex would still constantly get misgendered, like, on a regular basis by the same people who were claiming that they were so inclusive. And it's just like, make it make sense. So that's something I really want to see, like, to change for sure, like, is just, like, being more accepting and open-minded, getting rid of all of these heteronormative ideas of, like, what we should and shouldn't be just because we grew up in that space. Doesn't mean we have to have those same ideas and opinions in a slightly gay way. I want to see us have the equality we all deserve. I think a lot of people want to do a lot of things, but there's still so many legal loopholes or legal caveats to what gives us the same rights as straight people. And I want to see us just be happy. I think we all just deserve that.
And lastly, do you have any advice that you would give to any budding relationship anarchists or anyone who's intrigued by the concept?
I really think that it's just important to evaluate your relationships outside of the bonds you have. I think a lot of people get caught up in like, well, this is my family, or we've been friends for 15 years, or I've known this person since I was a baby. I think a lot of times the emotional bond we have with people kind of gets in the way of like objectively looking at the relationship and saying like, should I still hang out with this? Should I still be around this person? And I know that that's rough to kind of cut people off when you've had this close bond. But, you know, I think that's kind of the basis of the whole thing. Relationship anarchy is saying that I'm choosing this person. I'm not being forced to hang out or be around or whatever. I'm making the active choice to have this person in my life because of a certain reason that I feel is important. So if you can look at the relationship and say, these are the positive aspects of the relationship that I like. These are some things that are not so great. Do I still want to keep this person in my life despite these not so great things? Because everyone's going to have a thing where it's like, I don't like that, but you know, we're cool. So, you know, so kind of like talking about or discussing, or like even with yourself discussing like what exactly it is that you like about this person and why. And if you can really have a deep understanding of like what that looks like for you, what that means for you, and who this person is in your whole life, and say like, this is someone I'm keeping around because they value me, because I value them, then that's like the first step. Take the time to assess, because that's what will give you the power to say, you know what, maybe this isn't for me. Or maybe I need to make a different choice. Or maybe you're the best person I've ever met in my whole life. Maybe we're bestest friends on purpose. So yeah, I think if anything, just evaluate every single relationship and see why you want them in your life.
Wonderful. I think that's a wonderful place to leave that on that note. So lastly, for all of our listeners, where can people go if they want to see more of your work and your writing?
So I do have a website, corynicolewilliams.com. That's where all of my work things and all my professional stuff is. So I have a Twitter, corynicolew. Instagram is the same thing. I think that's pretty much it.
Excellent. Well, Corey, thank you so, so, so much for your time. And thank you so much for sharing your story. This has been a really wonderful, fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored.
I hope that all of you listening out there really enjoyed Corey sharing her story. You can stick around for our bonus episode. It's going to be some of the extra stuff that we didn't have time to get to in the main episode. We talk about a number of things, including cultural obsessions with women who have absent fathers, as well as some lighter things like some silly inside the actor studio style questions. So if you want to get access to that bonus episode, you can become one of our Patreon supporters. The best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and you can join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Emily Matlack, and me, Dedeker Winston. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvaneta. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Onand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.